We are now reconvened for the admin portion of the meeting. We have no items on consent for approval, so we'll move into discussion. And the first item for discussion is the initiation of the investigation into impacts of extreme weather events. Jack.
And I guess I don't have too much to add aside just from the motion that I provided to the three of you. I know all three of you, as well as staff, has they've been discussing the impacts that the most recent extreme weather events may have on utility rates as well as the companies as well. And I know you had some interest, the three of you did, into looking into this and how we can alleviate some of the concerns as well as the impacts on the customers. And this motion would essentially direct staff to open an investigation and in the manner we see fit with the correct docket numbers.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jack. So I do support this and think it's the right way to go. The investigation, I think, might be a little bit confusing to the public as we use that term, because I think it automatically suggests like there might be wrongdoing, and I don't think that's what we're getting at here, that there's necessarily wrongdoing. I think what we're trying to figure out and explore is what are the charges? What are the increased costs? How are they the same or different for each company? And how can we best deal with those moving forward in terms of assessing them to the customers? At the same time, through the investigation, the piece that I feel like is important and kind of will lead to perhaps future changes is, what are the contracting practices that the companies are following? How are they similar or different across the board between the various natural gas companies? And how might we work with them to, in the future, eliminate or reduce some of the potential risks that it creates for increased rates by allowing them to hedge better or engage in more longer-term contracts, that sort of thing. So that's the piece of the investigation that I think will possibly lead to changes down the road. But that wouldn't be something that obviously we could apply to the most recent weather instance. And if you have any thoughts on that you guys want to add, I'd be happy to hear them.
I really don't have too much to add to that. I know we have been watching, and we already do expect some sort of rate impacts resulting from the most recent weather in some form. So that is one thing, like I said, we'll be able to present to you after we do some more data requests and dig into it a little more.
Okay.
I think it's important to, for the people listening and press in the room, this is a preliminary. We're in the preliminary stages of looking at what the potential impact will be. There will certainly be an impact. But I think it's important for consumers to realize that the impact will not be reflected on their next utility bill. The next round of utility bills, however, will invariably be higher because we had extreme cold during the month of February, and which is typical in this part of the world. We live in a cold environment, if you will, during the winter months. So there will be that impact, and that would have occurred regardless. And that's a seasonal impact that's to be expected. So what we're going to look at, though, in addition to that, would be the spike in natural gas prices that did occur during the cold snap. The entire system was under pressure from a supply and demand standpoint, particularly due to wellheads freezing in the state of Texas. Their equipment is, or their drilling locations aren't equipped the same way that ours would be in North Dakota. North Dakota, they're built for withstanding freezing temperatures. And in Texas, for example, it's not unusual to have pipes on top of the ground to gather and move product to market. Ours are buried because of the frigid temps that we see in January, February in particular. So our job is to take a look at mitigating the impacts to the extent we can from a balanced billing standpoint, and spreading those costs out so not so consumers aren't experiencing sticker shock on any particular bill. And again, this is beyond the cold snap, which people can expect higher utility bills for natural gas because of the cold snap. That was going to happen without the extreme weather event. So I think it would only be natural that people will see their next utility bill, feel that it was caused by the spike in natural gas prices, by the problems that extended all the way down to Texas. And just in fairness, that's not the driving factor on the bills that they're going to see coming up. The extreme cold was. Then we'll take the other part, which we're investigating, looking into, and that is the spike in gas prices. I believe I heard from the company, one of the companies, approximately an $80 impact. But if possible, we'll look at spreading those costs out over a 12-month period, for example, whatever we come up with. And then the average monthly impact will be far less. So just being cognizant of those, especially on fixed incomes, that to get that in one large chunk would put some undue pressure on them. So we'll look at that. But the other part, a lot of times, I think the question I've gotten quite a bit, I'm guessing I've been asked at least several dozen times, why don't we just keep our own natural gas? Why don't we just keep our own electricity? Because we are an exporter of energy. And why are we giving up some of ours? But being a part of the grid and being a part of a larger system benefits North Dakota significantly because we are an energy exporter. We need those systems to move our energy out of state into other markets. So the net benefit for the state of North Dakota is significant. It's our second, first largest industry in the state. Agriculture and energy kind of go back and forth depending on pricing. But it's important that we are members of these larger systems, these larger networks, to push our product to others. And again, the state benefits as a whole. So we'll look at it not from that economic standpoint, of course, but from the economics of the ratepayer and make it as palatable as we can.
Any other thoughts from you, Randy?
I think we have to go into investigations with open minds, too, so I think enough's been said.
Okay. Another thing that I want to explore with the investigation is what tools might exist to I know, like, at least in Wisconsin, they require their utilities to file, I think, fuel reports for each year, or, you know, in terms of how they're securing their fuel resources, their contracting practices, et cetera, on an annual basis. And I'm not saying that we should do that. I just think it's worth exploring what kind of options exist out there in terms of a regulatory tool for that type of analysis and filing. So, all right. So can you walk through the steps, one of you, in terms of where we go from here? If well, first of all, we'd have to make this motion and pass it. But once we, assuming we do that, it sounds like we're all supportive of it. What happens?
So I guess what I would envision is immediately we open up the dockets and, well, staff will have a discussion of how many dockets we need open, whether it's just one or one for every electric and gas utility or just one for each company, depending on what type of input we expect back. After that, staff will immediately set up some parameters for the investigation, start doing data requests, and then probably periodically provide your report back. And, of course, with the input that you already have provided, as well as we'll continue to provide, we get the information you need so that we can address the concerns as they arise during the investigation. And you're absolutely right, Commissioner Fedorchuk, when you said that there may be no action ultimately required for a number of these items, but in some items there may be some interest in providing some sort of gradualism or rate treatment.
And can we focus on the natural, is there a reason to focus on the natural gas side first versus the electric, because the rate spikes might be higher and there might be action needed in terms of spreading the costs over multiple months more urgently than the electric side?
I think we're expecting a delayed impact to a lot of the rates as it is as a result of the extreme weather events. I think probably the largest focus is going to be on the gas side.
Okay.
And so I'm sure we'll be digging in on the front end to all of it, but I do believe that the vast majority of the investigation will be into the natural gas utilities.
Okay, good. And so will you do an initial letter out to all the utilities after this meeting at some point, saying, here's what we need you to file? Is that how you envision doing this?
We'll make a request in what documents we would like them to file shortly after this meeting, probably in the next couple of days.
And when do you anticipate, have you thought about what time frame you might ask for a report back from them?
Well, usually after a request, they respond within 10 days.
Okay.
Is the normal, unless there is some reason why they aren't able to have the information, and they usually inform us of that.
Okay. So we'll just get updates then on a couple week basis, perhaps, on how this is proceeding.
Absolutely.
I think I do want to throw out one thing for staff, though. One of the big questions that I think we need to resolve is what is the proper time to spread the cost of the impact out? And, I mean, it's easy to spread it out over a long time so people aren't upset and they don't notice that their bill went up. But there's also some impropriety if we go too long, in that people move in and people move out, and if you delay it for too long, you have people who weren't even here to experience this paying for it, and people who benefited from having that gas provided to them, albeit it took a high cost to get it there, who move away and don't have to pay for it. So there is that balancing act. So I think we need to figure out the right time of it.
Yep. Good point. All right. So then procedurally, do you need somebody to make this motion?
We would need the motion made.
Brian, it's your portfolio. Do you want to make the motion?
I move the commission initiate an investigation into impacts and rate treatment for public utility customers related to the extreme weather events of February 5th through the 18th, 2021.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for that. Moving on to another interesting topic of the RTO Letters and Technical Conference. Victor sent around a draft of a letter yesterday. I provided some feedback to him directly, and you kind of in that set a date for the technical conference, which I think is too far into the future. So maybe we can just discuss where we're at with this, and I'm happy to share my feedback to the letter as well, but I'll let you talk first, Victor.
Sure. So the date in the room, I just kind of arbitrarily put something on there.
I see. I didn't need to get fired up about that.
No.
It was arbitrary, but it's not capricious.
Right. Exactly. This was just kind of my initial draft. I wanted to get something out to you so we can kind of talk about more the direction of where you want to go with this today. Initially were looking for some feedback on Monday, and I don't think I got anything from anyone, so I thought I would go somewhere with it, and this is where we went. So look forward to what you all want to do with this.
So my overall feedback, and I don't have my letter with me, but in general, I thought the introductory part of the letter was great. I think it was similar to a letter that Adam had drafted as well. So they think it was a combination of those two letters. The list of questions to me is just too daunting and unorganized. We need to like break it up into categories, summarize some of them into maybe one longer question with multiple parts, and just, you know, so yep. The format of it to me is not effective yet. But I think that we've got, you know, a lot of the questions are there. I just would like to see them summarized, developed into themes or categories and shortened.
Sure. Yeah, the questions were really kind of just dumping ground for the few that I had thrown together, the ones Adam had already put together. So
yeah.
This is just kind of all of them. We can knock them off the list. We can organize them into categories. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I will admit I dropped the ball on getting feedback back and did not get around to like coming up with a recommendation for reorganizing. I thought too as I was going through them. I mean I marked down three of them where I thought there was just a little grammar issue or something like that that I thought needed clarifying. But in general, yes, it did seem almost daunting. Like they're just going to say, yeah.
It's too much. Yeah.
Times 10 or 14 states.
We do have full-time jobs.
And so I think, too, we probably need to kind of abbreviate things and be less precise in the questioning.
Okay. Bigger themes. Brian?
Do I have a thought? Just about ready to burst out of me, don't you? I said this before. The challenge is right now the RTOs are getting letters from U.S. senators, House members, governors, utilities, various stakeholders. It's an avalanche, I'm quite certain, of letters. And without question, we need to ask the appropriate questions. It was a long list when I look at it. I think as we go through it, what's the end result that we want out of this? So we just don't receive a boilerplate answer or answers that other states and entities are getting as well. So I need to take a more detailed look at it, but tailoring it to really answer the questions that are most specific to North Dakota, I think that would be the litmus test for me when we go through these various questions. And I think a few of them we can actually answer internally. For one example, winterization of wind facilities. We really control that to some extent when you look at the siting process and what we're willing to approve in terms of how the utilities themselves, when they have a owned facility, how they're equipped and how they might operate. So I think that's just an example of a question I think that might come back to the commission more than the utilities, or at least in coordination and cooperation with them. So, but yeah, there are more questions right now than answers, and some of this I think will come out naturally during the course of the various discussions that are already taking place. So it's important we have a seat at the table, and I'm not opposed to being specific though and drilling down into some of these areas.
So what we need to do is, because we've already settled on, we're going to have this technical conference, and so we need to, and this letter is kind of the first stage in saying we have concerns, we want to sit down with you and talk about them and talk through this, here's what we'd like you to address, and here's, you know, we want to invite you to this technical conference and bring, so everybody's at the table talking through this. So we need to set a date and we need to finalize that letter. I guess from my perspective, from a process standpoint, I'd like to see you guys take our feedback, consolidate the questions and the themes, and come back with a revised draft, and then we can take it from there and then I also view that letter as kind of setting the stage for the conference, because if we break it up into themes, then we're basically kind of organizing the conference too. So it is a lot of work. And this is why you didn't get feedback from us on the letter, I think, is that, I mean, it's just like someone has to go through the tedious work of this, combining the questions, thinking about the themes, and then thinking about what's missing and making that recommendation. And I'm happy to help with that. I just can't do the first draft.
And I think I want to throw this out, because I want to make sure I'm not on a different page with the rest of you. To the extent I've advocated for having a technical conference, it's not just about the two RTOs.
Right.
And, you know, to go through and get probably fairly long answers to all these questions from two different RTOs would just about consume a day. I really envision this technical conference as being both RTOs, hopefully FERC and NERC will send someone, hopefully WAPA, they're a big player here, plus our own utilities. And so we need to be mindful of how long a day takes too, but I think it is important for the people in North Dakota to have these people in a room at the same time and see the way responsibility seems to always be passed over to whoever's not in the room. I think there's a lot of value to asking these questions, but we need to have a line of questioning that allows us to ask a lot of questions of a lot of others, too.
Yeah. You know, one thing.
Which won't all be stated in the letter. I mean, all of those.
It won't all be stated in the letter.
This just is the framework.
If they got this letter, they'd probably come each thinking they have a half a day.
Right.
And we have a lot of other players that I'm going to get to in that day, too.
I think, and this is one of those tough questions, but I think two really important points. I don't know that it is reflected, but I think it could be more specific. And maybe it's not. Does the right regulatory framework currently exist to ensure grid reliability? And do we have the right people at the table when it comes to planning and looking at these things? Because obviously it's the grid is supposed to be, on the electric side in particular, it's supposed to be set up for the most extreme weather event imaginable based on history, and that occurred. This wasn't beyond some of the cold snaps that have happened in the past. You mentioned that the other day, Commissioner Christman, and I couldn't agree more. And obviously there was a significant failure of the system. So the two points is the proper regulatory framework currently exist, and they can't be shy on answering that because we need to know, and are the right people at the table making these decisions?
And now those questions they might be ripe for the technical conference with FERC and NERC and, you know, some of those other people that aren't already fully embedded into the RTO process. So those are good questions. All right. So, Victor, do you guys have enough direction?
I think, do you have some of the themes in mind that you're alluding to? I mean, are you thinking more like
I think I sketched them out in my email to you.
Okay.
Some of them. I don't recall them offhand. But I think I provided some recommendations for categories that might serve as like a and so I think
Within the next day or two I'll try and do better at getting back to you and Adam with more information too to give you.
Okay. So if we can get if you have some response, if you want to get it, I don't know, by what, tomorrow? Is that?
I'll try and get you something by tomorrow.
Okay. And then Adam and I can work together on consolidating that and getting some themes in here.
I think as you look at the questions, you'll see that they come into, they kind of align in categories, and that's what I'm thinking about, categories, themes, same type thing.
Sure.
So you can, I think once you start looking at them that way, you'll see some themes jump out at you.
Sounds good. and we will get something sent out. And I don't know if we want to continue doing emails. Do you want to schedule another meeting to continue the discussion?
I think let's go with you revising it, getting a draft, and then we can look at it and see if we need to schedule a meeting.
Okay.
Does that work? Awesome. Thank you.
One quick side to this. So a while back, we had talked about scheduling RTO update meetings.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't scheduled those yet. The RTOs were actually waiting for topics from us up until the incident happened. I'm assuming we don't want to move forward with those, and this would kind of be...
Well, this would be one, actually.
I think this will take the place of that.
Mm-hmm.
That was my thought as well. I just wanted to confirm that your thinking is
the same way. Yeah. What are we thinking about dates, though? Because you had said June.
I just threw out there June. I wasn't sure if you want to.
How do we want to proceed? I mean, I'm happy to reach out to the MISO folks and say, you know, here's what we're thinking about. When's the soonest you could send people in person?
And I'll do the same for SPP. They're still in a travel restriction.
So is MISO.
I was told by one pretty high up person that there is the possibility for exceptions.
Yeah, I've heard the same. So, just depends on who we want, I think. So,
I think a question that goes back to the RTOs as well, they're still in the information gathering mode, and I would imagine that that started on day one, even during the event. They're starting to gather data, information, and we want to make sure they're ready, but I agree, I think June is too late, but maybe that's a question to pose to them when they think they'll have a...
I'm really hoping for like a mid-May kind of time frame.
I would admit, I mean, they should be ready by that.
Yeah.
So.
I was thinking same-ish, maybe early May, like as soon as April's passed, the legislature's over for sure. Yeah. I was hoping we could tackle this. Okay. So, we've got a plan?
Close enough.
All righty. Number three, reliability legislation. Jack, do you have copies of your proposal?
I don't. I could go make some real quick. Should
get... Have these guys seen it?
I provided a copy to all three of you as well as...
I have fun as well.
Sure. Okay. I don't have it sitting in front of me, but do you...
Could make a photocopy real quick?
Yeah, I think that would be helpful.
I don't need it. I have it. I don't need a copy.
Okay. Thanks. So basically, this was the revisions after our discussion on Friday. Right, Jack?
That's correct.
And the idea is once we kind of settle on what we want to recommend, then we'll take it to the leadership and say, you know, here's what we think would be the best approach. So I really liked what you proposed, Jack, and the changes. I think it addresses some of the concerns from the industry. While also providing the tools that we need to make a meaningful difference here. So I really support this. I also support the two items in Section 2. I think that the first item there, point 6, is going to be that we know that the industry doesn't oppose that, so that should be no problem. Number 7 is probably going to get some pushback, but I think you changed some of the most difficult language in that, and I think it just clarifies that if there's failure to provide reliable service, the commission can look into it and has the ability to assess a fine or disallow recovery of stuff. So I think it's all good.
You kind of lost me when you said number 7. Did you mean...
Point 7.
Point 7.
Like 49.05.04.7?
Correct.
Okay.
I didn't want to go through all of that.
I thought, are we on a different...
I abbreviated. Okay.
I totally agree. I like this, and well, willing to advocate very hard for it. And this would be not to replace, but to add to the current language of 2313.
Correct.
That's my understanding.
Yeah, that's what I see.
So the transmission authority
study
that are there would remain.
Yep. So these would be additional amendments to 2313 that we would ask or support them offering as it moves through the House process. Brian, how about you?
I visited with Jack quite a bit on this. Was that yesterday, Jack? The week's already been a blur.
That's correct.
Was that yesterday? I think it's a little more palatable to me. I still think it creates a large gray area in terms of how you define reliable service.
Are you talking about point seven?
Point seven. I'm looking at point seven in particular. Did point six? No. Point six didn't change from our conversation yesterday. That's still the same, correct, Jack?
Sorry, I didn't catch
that. Point six didn't change from our conversation yesterday, correct?
None of these have changed since our discussion.
I think the question I have is what is deemed reliable service? I think from a practical standpoint, it's that you have electricity 24/7, 365 days a year, for example. That's easy definition of reliable, but then you get into weather events, things of that nature, and that's where I think that's just something that commission's going to have to sift through. And I guess you're using the word may.
Yeah.
It's permissive.
That's the key.
And I think, were you done?
Well, I just want to, obviously we want to look out for the end user. You know, that's our job, but we also have to be reasonable in terms of how we approach things. I would use an example. If a utility did not take care of its infrastructure, substations, et cetera, had a significant failure in service, that's on them. That was a failure to provide reliable service, but at the same time, if you have an ice storm or things of that nature, And I guess it probably doesn't have to be embedded in this, but there's also that point of reason in terms of icing on lines. Well, we saw that in south central, southeast North Dakota, 3 weeks ago? Mm-hmm. 2-3 weeks ago. Heavy frost, a lot of humidity in the air, and the lines were literally sagging to the ground. I don't know what you can do to prevent that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's given.
A judgment call, but,
and I think it's the beauty of this. It is simple enough for the legislature and the citizens, the consumers, to see that the companies that provide them service and by North Dakota's laws and rules prevent them from getting their service from someone else, is going to hold that company accountable. And it's simple enough and understandable, and yet it is what we do, and what we do very well. I use the example when the discussion in our legislative discussion got into a little bit about maybe something being excessive with our one call system, that we don't assign the maximum penalty that's allowable to us every single time. In fact, a lot of times there's no penalty at all. And as you're saying, we know that an ice storm comes and the power line goes down. Those things happen in a state like North Dakota. But now, to use a different comparison than the penalties and one call, with these very same utilities, there's no precise template when they're in here for rate cases or ADPs for what is going to be useful or what costs are reasonable. Mm-hmm. We make those distinctions all the time. and especially with the term reasonable. And I think that this commission can be counted on to do that going forward with this responsibility as well. And if we don't have this responsibility, we're right back to what they're seeing in Texas, that, you know, everybody has someone else to blame and nobody really has responsibility. I think that this is essential language that needs to be added to the Century Code book, and the responsibility to be added to this commission.
Jack, I like it.
Is the language already a part of code to some extent already? So this is just taking a deeper dive into it, is that correct?
Well, I guess to illustrate a couple actions the commission has taken in the past, if you recall, and this would be an inaction. Last year, Otter Tail Power did have a major outage from ice storms, and they worked very hard to get everybody up and operating again, and the commission, of course, evaluated it and discussed it with the company and ultimately did not take action against it. Separately, we set a reliability performance standard for XL Energy 1 year, and it would allow them additional recovery of rates if they met it. And in the commission's opinion, they did not meet it and ultimately disallowed that additional those additional amounts in rates. And so I guess those are two illustrations where, to a degree, we have taken this consideration. I think that frequently falls under adequacy of service. I think this is a little bit of a broader statement. Based upon where it's placed, though, if this is something the commission is interested in pursuing.
I like it, too, that it clarifies who's responsible for providing the reliable service. And I think it, to the extent that the utilities are uncomfortable with it because of the weather, et cetera, I do think that the commission has a long, long history of recognizing weather events and, you know, the whether or not the company can prevent line outages, et cetera, during them. So I don't think those are really well-founded concerns on the utility side. The part that I think they might be concerned about as well that is perhaps more problematic for them is their ability to provide reliable service when they're involved in these regional transmission organizations that have rolling blackouts. And so that's precisely why I think this is helpful and is another tool, because it is intended to be an encouragement to the utilities to get more engaged with the RTOs to say, listen, we're responsible here. So whatever part of this is infringing on our ability to deliver what we are required to deliver, we need to fix that and to just engage more directly with the RTOs on policies that help shore up reliability. And I think this will help do that. So that's one of the main reasons why I support it. And I also think that we're going to be pretty reasonable in the approach of actually pursuing any fines, et cetera, on this nature. So I like it. I like all of this stuff. I mean, I think ideally it would have been better to have had this conversation about this starting in September and leading up to the legislative session. But just the way things evolved, it didn't happen that way. And I think that we've landed in a good spot and are proposing to add some pretty strong new tools in our tool basket on the integrated resource planning and reliability that should help us work through these issues as the grid continues to evolve and create more risk for customers. So yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I think it's important to mention that this wasn't the Texas event, if you will, wasn't the triggering mechanism for this legislation. This was in process prior to the extreme weather event. So it was a forward-looking approach, not a knee-jerk reaction to what happened, not just in Texas, but the ripple effect it had throughout the country. And we'll see where this goes. I think the key in all of this is the integrated resource plan review on the part of the commission, because we also have to watch that utilities are going to want to err on the side of caution, and I think they're going to want to heavy up on generation resources. But then we have to balance that with cost as well at the same time, so consumers aren't seeing a significantly higher bill because of this. So that's something we're just going to have to sort through and make sure we take a balanced approach, an appropriate approach to all of this. But I do expect we're going to see more aggressive asks on the IRP side when they submit those.
Okay.
I guess some clarification that I could use. I mean, there's still some cleanup that needs to be done in this as it is. I mean, changing numbers and so forth. Mm. This was just to get the discussion going and seeing if all three of you were on the same page regarding the discussion that was provided on Friday. I guess for the next steps, is there an interest from the commission of, again, meeting with the public utility shareholders and the different public utilities to discuss this?
I don't think we need to.
Okay. I think it's time to meet, finalize our plan and meet with the leaders.
Sure.
Yeah, I think meet with the leaders, and I think that meeting might include the utility shareholders,
okay,
like it did the last time we discussed this.
Sure. And I guess the other issue as well, and I know I discussed this with the three of you, the 4907 penal provision that maxes out at $5,000. Is that something that you might want some clarification that, you know, for an outage is a $5,000 penalty really where it's at? And so if we're going to look at it per occurrence or per customer or so forth, this would be an opportunity to provide more express clarity in the actual legislation.
Would you add that? Under 0.7?
Could do 4905. Yeah, under the reliable service obligation, it could be on a per-customer basis, which then could be a hypothetical.
So a penalty on a per-customer basis in accordance with chapter, something simple like that?
Something simple like that. I know because Commissioner Christman, you expressed some concerns related to that.
Needs to be. There's a whole difference between, you know, outage that affects a handful of people and an outage that affects the whole state. It's a different thing. And so I think it should be on a per customer basis.
And I guess as this relates to bringing this forward, then will there be one commissioner who will be more interested in, I mean, now we have a consensus and moving forward with this and I guess engaging the discussion?
Well, I last Friday told the leaders what our plan was in terms of timing. So I think that they'll be expecting to hear back from us here in the next couple of days.
Okay.
With our amendments.
True.
I think this affects all portfolios, so I'm willing to defer to the chair.
Okay.
I will just say, as you know, things evolve in the legislative session.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll defer to the chair as long as Section 3 is there.
Yeah. I don't anticipate, just to be clear, I don't anticipate that discussion to be a negotiation.
Right.
I mean, it isn't also in our hands. So whether they negotiate, that's up to them. But I think what I envision is here's our position. This is where the commission stands on this. This is what we think is best. We've met with the industry. We've recognized some of their changes, not all of them. And so here's what we recommend. And then they have to decide what they're going to do.
Yeah.
That's how I envision it.
I will probably pass this out, of course, as I clean this up to the different stakeholders. And then I'll envision Commission for our check and continue to move forward with this new leadership.
And when you say you have cleanup, you just mean some numbers, nothing substantive.
Numbers. And if there is a major, you know, as I read this through final time and discuss with staff, if there is a major thing, I'll bring it to your attention that we might have missed.
Yeah, I think we obviously have an agreement in principle in terms of the language, but I can't say that I won't also reach out to leadership. And
of course,
because I think I have a little different take, and I just want to make sure we're not missing something as we go through this and create an environment, again, as one example, that the utilities come in heavied up on resources when they submit their IRP to the commission, because yes, there's a monetary fine involved, but there's also the PR portion of being deemed unreliable in the eyes of the public, and that can be equally, if not more, detrimental to any of the utilities out there. And so, you know, we have to approach it from a standpoint of fairness. But the scenario is, so they heavy up on an IRP. We look at it and we say, that's too much. It's just, it's too much. It's overkill. Well, then if there's a reliability issue related to generation, and we had said no, that's one of the potential challenges in all of this. So in principle, I completely agree holding the utilities responsible without question, but I also want to make sure that we're not incentivizing the wrong behavior to be safe if you're...
So if you express those concerns to leadership, what do you want them to do to address that in the words? Because you're not suggesting changes to the words here. I think leadership would be confused by that.
I do too.
I think they'd be confused by it to some extent, but I also think it's something they need to be aware of. I can't imagine that if this is adopted and becomes part of code, that it won't be revised in the next session to some extent. Because once we put it into practice, especially because I realize this isn't the IRP legislation, but the two are related.
Well, it goes
directly
into the
related
same section
one.
Of loss.
Right. So the two are very much interrelated. And I'll just continue to look. I can't say that there isn't a language tweak that might result from conversations. Maybe it stays as it is, too. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I would like to provide as clear a message to them as possible. So do you think it's feasible if you have tweaks that you want to think about that we do that before we bring them the language? So I don't want to mischaracterize where you're at, and I also don't want to make it more confusing to them because it's something that is you know, they don't deal with this stuff every single day. It gets a little technical, and I think it's a challenge for... I'd like to make it as easy as possible from us to them saying, we are confident about this and encourage you to move forward. So I guess I'm open to, if you've got some tweaks you'd like to make, if we could do that ahead of time before we provide them the language.
Yeah, I think that's doable.
Okay. And then in which case, if that happens, then we'll have to gather a little meeting and sure. Talk it through. But
And just one more item, and I know you guys all said you're comfortable with all three of these. There was some discussion, I can't remember which, with the commissioner, that maybe section two or three, maybe we might not want to go forward with both of those or just one of them. And I just want to make sure this is all three of these sections are the direction right now that we want to recommend.
I think initially, and from my perspective, I thought maybe it was either or.
Okay.
But as I've thought about it and looked at it, I think they're complementary and they're both good to include.
I'm okay with both of them being in. I do worry, too, that when we're not around to highlight the importance of Section 3, that perhaps some legislators might be misled into believing that Section 2 takes care of the concern. And so I guess to avoid that might be the one cause for getting rid of Section 2. But I'm okay with... As long as I just am very focused on doing everything that I can to make sure Section 3 stays.
Also, one other point to Brian's concerns. Some of that, what I like about the language today is it's pretty general. This language is broad and general. And we can develop rules as we go to address some of the concerns that come up in the process that might be more of what Brian's talking about. So that might be a way for us to deal with those issues down the road. as we see them evolve.
Agree.
Sure.
And one more thing I wanted to bring up, just to limit the amount of variables and if we need any more meetings on this subject. In some previous draft that I think I had gotten from you, Jack, but I think it was probably a legislator's draft, but that was similar to this. And in the first section, in 1B, in the last line, and then in 2, in the second line, is the word customers, and in a previous version it said in this state. Are those words that should be in and got missed, or that were in that version and you thought were better left out, or what? I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other. I just lessening a variable for later.
Yeah. I guess when I would envision how most integrated resources plan, the plans are, I mean, it's an integrated system, but they usually break it down on a jurisdictional preferred plan basis. And so I would imagine be to serve our customers. If there's any lack of clarity in that, we would be able to just tell the company to do it on as it relates to our customers. But if there is an interest in putting it back in, that I don't think that would have an impact either way.
I don't have a recommendation. I'll defer to you unless others feel strongly about it.
I'm fine with it the way it is.
Okay.
So we're good with that?
I have direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. Okay, so without objection, I'd like to take a little break here before we go into scheduling and see if there's any questions from the media who sat around for the most exciting part of our meeting today, which was the admin. Do either of you object? And then we'll come back to scheduling. Okay.
I have no objection.
And after we're done with the press part, I will need a short break because I forgot my Microsoft verifier, so I can't get in my calendar until I
Oh. All right. We'll break briefly to see if there's any questions.
I just wanted to double check with you the number and the names of the gas utilities that the PSC regulates. There's MDU, Xcel, Great Plains. Are there any others?
What's that last one that we...
Dakota Natural Gas, but I'm not sure if they're fully operational yet. I believe they were... They may be already, though, as well.
Yeah, that's the small... Well, it's the new entity, a smaller operation that I believe serves the city of Drayton, and then Hillsborough... is it Hillsborough?
Will in the future.
So they're a new player in the market.
Okay. And then do you guys, I know it sounds like the focus of the investigation would be more on the natural gas side of things, but do you envision going much into the electric side of things? And then also, I know a lot of the issues were concerning like the Southwest Power Pool and Basin Electric and WAPA, and I know that those aren't necessarily entities that you always regulate.
So I think that's where we'll get into those issues through the technical conference that we're going to be hosting, and that the whole big picture will be addressed through that. And in terms of the investigation, from my perspective, I think it's important to start with the natural gas, but also look into the electric side of things, too, with some initial questions and see what staff comes up with in terms of issues to pursue and questions to ask. But there are some obvious questions that we need to explore with them as well, either through that investigation, through the technical conference, or both. That's my perspective.
And we are members of SPP. Mm-hmm. While we don't directly regulate the entities that you mentioned, there is interplay there in that WAPA and Basin, they carry some load for MDU and definitely for Otter Tail. I don't know if there's any for XL. And as well as those companies carrying some for them. And so there's interactivity there. And so there's plenty of basis for us to bring them into the conversation.
Okay. And then with regard to the conference, that's something that you're planning to host and to invite the various stakeholders to address the questions that you have.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Date to be determined, but early to mid-May.
Okay. That's all I've got.
Do you think lessons have been learned about what happened with the big chill in Texas?
Lessons learned already? Or do we already have some of the causes?
Or just lessons learned so far?
Oh, I think there's definitely been lessons learned. Have there been solutions identified and implemented? I think that that's waits to happen and is not something that can happen overnight anyway. But and I think there's more lessons to be learned as well. I don't think all of them are identified yet.
Yeah, I can't say I'm 100% confident that lessons were learned. We won't know until we see what the takeaways are at the end of all of this, including what steps need to be taken to prevent this from happening in the future, and also just watching to ensure that this doesn't become more politicized than it already has been. That's a challenge. It's been very political in nature because it was mentioned earlier, and it's spot on. There's a lot of finger pointing. There's a lot of people casting blame on other parties. So for me, to answer the question on whether or not lessons were learned remains to be seen. But there isn't an alternative. There has to be zero tolerance of not winding up in a spot where lessons were learned and changes are made.
And Dave, I really feel that I hope I'm proven wrong, but I don't think it's going to be the case. I think there were some important and good lessons learned too, so I don't want to diminish that. But I fear that one of the lessons that's been learned is that it's important to have a scapegoat. And that's the lesson that I don't want them to take away from this. And I fear it's happening. And also that the system that we have is pretty effective for accomplishing that. Because there's not very many that I hear taking any responsibility either from themselves personally or from the agencies that they had. And that is part of the discussion in this technical conference. That's part of the discussion that we were just having for legislation to clarify that someone's going to be responsible in North Dakota. And there has to be that element to it because, it's kind of a circular deal. It seems like everybody's pointing to someone within a circle. But if it does tend to narrow down, quite often it seems like things go back to FERC because they're at the top of the food chain and none of us can ever talk to them anyways, so it's easy to blame them. But if anybody is thinking that FERC is going to solve this problem, they ought to have been cured of that thought 2 weeks ago while this crisis was still occurring. They closed their resiliency docket without getting to any solution. That pretty well, I think, told the story of how concerned about this FERC is. So, enough said.
I think one of the lessons that has been learned, at least I hear this in the MISO side and in my conversations with leadership there, is that the technical people who understand and have shared concerns about the plans that are being made by politicians for the grid now realize that they need to speak up. And they have some real examples to point to. And so I think that's, I'm not giving excuses for them not speaking up, but it's an interesting industry, this, and collaboration that occurs. The people that are responsible for this, they're engineers and maybe IT people. And when they say stuff, they think that, okay, we've alerted you. We've said, there are additional, it gets increasingly complex after 30% integration of renewables. It's increasingly complex. That's code for we can't do it. But they don't get to that second piece of it's not possible right now, or it's really, really expensive. They don't say it like that because they're engineers and technical people. But so the politicians who are hearing this think, oh, the engineers and technical people, they'll take care of it. They've got it. They'll figure it out. And there's just a simple thing of like communication between the two sides that it's a barrier to clarity and responsibility and good decision making. And that I think if they realize now, like, oh, we haven't been loud enough about our concerns, hopefully now they understand that and we'll double down on, especially at the leadership level.
You know, I think, you know, going back to your question on lessons learned, that will only be proven to be the case if we see meaningful change. And the reality is, in my opinion, it is about the electrical engineers. It's about the experts, and it's about communicating effectively with them. And I believe there were too many individuals, not that they're bad people, not that they aren't talented individuals, but I think there were too many people at the table that really, when you look at their backgrounds, I would classify as uniquely unqualified to have the level of influence that they did on the grid. And if I'm a Texas resident, I won't be confident that lessons were learned until meaningful change occurs. And, you know, the event happened, obviously, but we'll know more as we hear from the appropriate parties, and we'll know more, you know, from a North Dakota perspective after we meet with the people that we bring in for the conference.
I would like to provide a clarification. If it was not clear, that it's important to have a scapegoat is the lesson that I fear was learned by a lot of others. I hope that the work here, both going on with legislation and the technical conference, and that's not the lesson that was learned here.
Right.
I think what I've learned is that, A, our current system has a lack of defined responsibility, and, B, we need to either take responsibility or take action to clarify who mm-hmm. has responsibility and then hold them accountable.
Okay. Any other questions? Adam.
Just dovetailing off of all of that, there's been a lot of national conversation about obviously all the causes here, but also what to expect going forward given weather events. I'm curious if you see this as sort of a freak incident or an anomalous case, or how concerned are you about this kind of incident being spurred by weather events in the future?
I don't think it was anomalous at all. It was winter for us. And for most of the central part of the U.S., this is typical February weather. So the grid has to be able to respond and weather these types of events. And so, no, it was not anomalous. I think it was a identification of the some weaknesses, significant weaknesses of the plan that has been promoted and pursued to replace a lot of the baseload generation with renewables and back them up with gas. And so that system has not developed to the point where you can weather winter events like this nationwide. It just, there's not enough gas. The supply chains aren't strong enough. Things aren't weatherized across the nation in the same ways. And you can't have the natural gas for home heating and industrial use system in place relying on natural gas and then electric generation relying on gas and everybody expecting to get cheap gas. And that's what we've been told over and over again. There's so much gas and it's not going to be – it's $2 to $3 and that's what the price is going to be and we shouldn't worry about it. Well – you know, when everybody's demanding at the same time and systems aren't in place to get it there, that's you can't deliver on that promise. And that's, I feel, what the weakness, the big weakness that was identified. There was more than that, but that's a big weakness in this plan moving forward, and I think that got everybody's attention. Everybody that I've talked to in the world of the RTOs, that was a real obvious shortcoming of the current plan.
Yeah, the grid, it has to go beyond being equipped to deal with seasonal cold and seasonal heat. It has to be equipped and designed to withstand the most extreme weather events, at least those that have been documented throughout the course of history, those extreme events. And there gets to a point where, you know, it has to be based on science. But when you look back over the past century, this isn't the first time that there's been extreme cold across the United States or in the South. And I was trying to think, because I was probably only like in first or second grade in the 70s, so something like that anyway. But the citrus crop froze, not just in Texas, but across into Florida. And orange juice prices spiked and et cetera, et cetera. So this isn't the first time we've seen extreme widespread cold, and there were definitely supply issues with moving natural gas to market in the Texas oil fields, oil and gas fields. And that became another triggering event on top of another triggering event. The reality? There isn't even close to enough natural gas infrastructure pipe in the ground currently to continue pursuing the energy agenda that's been laid out, woefully short. And we were talking about this during the public input session last night because we had to create filler for about 15 minutes. Commissioner Christman brought up an excellent point, and it's true. Environmental groups are making it increasingly more difficult to put pipe in the ground. So you layer that on top of the need for more natural gas to support intermittent energy, and the two don't mix. It's not possible when you have that type of a landscape out there.
One other quick question on the investigation. I assume some of these details would come out in the investigation itself, but do you have a sense from the utility providers of what kind of a low end and a high end are for the amount of for the price increase that customers would be seeing on their bills?
I think it's $80.
MDU has thrown out $80, and we haven't heard much from Xcel. At least I haven't seen anything.
Wasn't there something reported of $300?
Well, that was the price of the gas. That wasn't the bill impact, yeah, I didn't think.
That was the gas was price was in the $200 to $300 range.
Yeah.
It spiked into that range.
So then, I don't know anymore.
Stay tuned.
You know, the one thing that, bears mentioning, and that is the recent weather event underscores the importance of baseload power, and the facilities in North Dakota did a tremendous job supplying power to the grid when other generation sources were challenged.
And I would like to use this opportunity now to dovetail on that. So as we're talking about the importance of baseload and the enormous costs that are going to be associated with what happened the last couple weeks, yesterday at just after 8, I looked at the LMPs for both SPP and MISO. And I forgot MISO.
Better tell them what LMPs is.
Something marginal price.
Locational
marginal price.
It's basically,
you have all the people that want to generate electricity bidding into a market, and whatever is the low price that gets them enough, then everybody gets paid that amount. If you bid less, you still get that amount. I can't remember. I think MISO was at least a positive amount, but it was less than normal costs of providing electricity. Normally, the price range is in order to incentivize grid providers, these prices should probably be $20 or $30 a megawatt. And if MISO was positive, it was far less than that. At SPP, though, in North Dakota, we were close to $7 a megawatt negative. And then through most of South Dakota, Nebraska, and Kansas, it was more like $17 negative. So now, if you are a coal or a nuclear facility or a combined cycle gas facility that is there to chug along and be relied on in events like 2 weeks ago, you have to bid a minimum amount because you got to keep your boiler going. The rest you can taper down, but you bid a minimum amount during even those occurrences. So yesterday morning, our coal plants that in the SPP, whatever amount of megawatts they were producing, they were paying $7 to $17 a megawatt to get rid of that electricity and keep their boiler on. Now, and the reason that it can go negative is there's a bunch of wind farms that were getting 20-some dollars a megawatt hour subsidy, and they have no fuel costs, so they could bid down to $17 negative and at least still get seven. What kind of a signal did that send to those coal and nuclear plants that we want them around for the next time that we have a cold spell like this? No, yesterday we were telling them through this tipped over market that the politicians like to refer to as this market, that they should just close down. That was the real message. And we just, the system cannot last decades into the future when we're sending that kind of message to the players that we really rely on when the going gets tough.
It's very true. And what's more on the motivation for the renewables, if they don't bid in, they don't get anything because they only get the tax credit money if they're producing. So it's a further motivation to produce. So it's huge. If you ever want to do a series of stories on what the transmission organizations are doing to address some of these issues, I mean, MISO has a whole list of new initiatives that they're pursuing to attempt to get at this, what they call this heavy blanket that is just weighing down the price on the markets that is driving a lot of the baseload folks out of business because it's not economic for them. They're coming up with a whole bunch of new mechanisms and tools to try to pay resources for all of the attributes that they bring to the grid. It's pretty interesting. It's kind of nerdy, but but if you that might be an interesting series of stories because I'm sure that the same type of thing is going on in SPP. Because that's really where the rubber hits the road in terms of what changes are going to occur to prevent the future reoccurrence of what just happened.
You know what, to me, one of the most startling things about this recent event is? What would have happened if it had occurred 5 years from now or 10 years from now when we still lack necessary natural gas pipeline infrastructure and we had more coal plant closures, more baseload facilities closing during that time period? If this had happened even 5 years from now, particularly 10 years from now, it would have been catastrophic. There was loss of life connected to this. There would have been significantly more. There's no question in my mind about that. So this has to be a wake-up call in terms of how we move forward. Because, again, if this had happened 5, 10 years from now, it would have been significant in terms of the impact to
the population. I wonder what would happen 2 years from now with the same occurrence in the north unit of MISO, the north zone of MISO, with Coal Creek not producing 1,100 mm-hmm. megawatts of power.
Yeah. I've asked MISO to run, to give us a run of how much Coal Creek and the other baseload units in the North Territory, what was their output during this last spell, just so we can have that information and have a part of the conversation, because I think we're going to find that they were running full bore in a year from now or 2 years from now when that facility, if it doesn't get sold, is not available. What's the plan?
Well,
I think I heard battery and some gas from Jerry. That's their plan for replacement.
Gas would have been a great deal.
Yeah, right.
$300 a decatherm.
If they could even get it. So, all right.
I'm relatively sure Commissioner Christman really needs to find his phone at this particular time.
Any other questions?
I could use a break.
Nope. All right. That concludes the questions part. I think we should take a 5-minute break, then come back for scheduling and signing.
Sounds great.
Does that work?
Good. Then I can get my Microsoft verifier so I can use my own computer.
Yes, yes, yes. I just circled May because that was a keyword. Ready to roll?
Yep.
Okay. We'll reconvene for the scheduling portion of the admin meeting. I'm going to start by making this simple. The first item, I don't have dates yet, so we can continue that to the next meeting. I'll connect with, I kind of played phone tag with Ron Ness over the weekend, and we never connected, so.
But before we move to two, can I pause you on mm-hmm. Petroleum Council in general?
Mm-hmm.
I know you were talking about, like, our meeting with them. Is there a need to publicize the Petroleum Council, the big conference they have May 11th through the 13th, in case more than one of us is there at the same time?
Wouldn't hurt.
Because I intend, I don't know what days, I haven't seen the right. schedule and stuff, but from the 11th through the 13th, I intend to be there as much as I can.
Agreed. I would assume that's across the board. So, yep.
Yeah, yes. we can double check with Jack. I know sometimes it depends on what exactly the conference is. So,
okay.
I will.
Yeah, we don't always notice like Nehru
role, which I
and
think
things
that's
like that.
Maybe what spurs it on. Like mm-hmm. One of us is speaking, and then the others are there. I don't have anything like that, but I do intend to be there. So
I will be moderating a panel. So
cool.
You should probably at least have that one. Make sure Jack knows that it's done right.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Randy. Hearing date, NSP 200 megawatt Heartland Divide wind application and the electric rate increase application. Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
I like how Jerry just waltzes in here right in time.
Hey,
like you're listening.
All right. I've got two things to schedule. The first one is the NSP wind farm Harrell's, whatever it was called. It's the multiple hearing.
Here's
a pen for you, Jerry. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So for the NSP wind farm case, since we just got another one come in yesterday again, we're going to put off the scheduling of 20-425 and schedule the 20-425 case. And so I've got a good list of them for that. I'm going to suggest June 10th.
So, just to be clear, there's two cases that are eventually going to need to be scheduled.
We're
going to
try
wind.
And do two of them. Now we're going to wait. And this new one that just came in, we're going to combine it with the 2425 case.
This one says 433.
Yep.
So what are the two case numbers? I'm sorry, I'm confused.
The two cases, well, you might get confused, but the 433 we're waiting with.
Okay.
And the other one, we were going to do 425 with it. And now we're going to wait with the 425. We're doing 433 now. By itself.
And then we're going to wait.
And that's the one I'm suggesting, June 20th. We can do
okay.
others.
So we're only doing one today, Jerry?
Yeah.
Okay. And the date for that is?
I suggested June 20th because that was staff and NSP were good on it.
Okay.
And is the one that we're doing 433?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So, pull up June.
I do not object to June 10th.
I thought you said 20th.
June. I said 10.
Oh, I'm sorry. June 10. June 10th.
If we do it the 20th, not till after church.
Say that again.
I have a board meeting on the 10th.
I have a question. Victor told me it was the 30th.
Which case are you scheduling?
433.
433, okay.
Okay.
And that's the 10th, but I...
We can do others if that's a problem.
I have an OMS board meeting that afternoon.
Okay.
Do we expect that case takes all day?
How about the 11th? Say that again, Randy.
Do we expect that the ADP case will take all day?
I don't know.
Oh, and that's here. Oh, I was thinking this was a wind farm.
We just had a new one that came in for it. And so there's more than one case there.
But we're only scheduling one.
Well, we haven't made up the choice on that yet, but we're not asking to schedule it today.
I see. I guess there would be the option of just taking a break if we don't finish by. I was thinking this was a citing case, but it's ADP, so.
How long do board meetings?
Staff had asked for a little more time. We were looking at the 10th before.
So throughout some
now
dates.
That we got that new case, and they wanted a little bit of time to look at it, figure out.
So you're thinking maybe later?
Schedule a different
okay. time. What other dates did you have then?
The other one, we had the 433 case, and I was looking at the same dates as before on that. So we could do the... If you had didn't like the 10th, we could do the 11th. You had that OMS meeting?
Yeah.
Could we do the 11th for everybody?
Well, that doesn't give a lot of extra time. I would rather say do it on the 10th and be prepared to take a break if we don't finish. But
that's okay with me.
And then I would say, if you're thinking about combining it with another one still...
We're not still... Well, we might change our mind, but...
Right. But so to have that flexibility, then maybe we would have the 11th available if we needed 2 days, if we extended it to two cases. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And let's start kind of early on the 10th.
Yeah. Does that make sense to you?
So the OMS board meeting that day, is that like right afternoon or something?
It's at 1, yeah. So if we started at 8 or 8:15 or something and then got rolling, we could potentially finish. If we don't finish, we could take a break. And if you decide you want to, down the road, add another case, combine it with another case, then we could potentially just add the 11th in and have 2 days.
If they want to do that.
If they want to do that.
Yeah, they're not sure what they want to do yet.
Sure.
They just saw it.
You are the only participant in this conference. Press any key to continue this conference.
In other words,
we've timed out.
So, are you guys good with that?
I have it on the 10th right away in the morning, and then we're just going to put a hold on the 11th in case we decide to add something.
I think that's a good idea.
SP ADPs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Got it?
Yep.
Should we say 8:15?
Yes.
Okay.
This is for case 433. Okay. June 10th at 8:15. All right.
Break at 11. Oh, I'm sorry, at 1.
Yeah, if need be. Okay, then we've got the rate case.
And yes, we're putting that in there in case you need it.
You're the only participant in this conference. Press any key to continue this conference.
What was that, Jerry?
And we're keeping that just in case we need it.
The 11th.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so now not onto the next one for the rate increase.
The next is the rate case.
Yep.
PU-20-441. our suggestion for there is the whole week is open for July 19th.
When did the case come in, Pat?
Huh?
Or Jerry, when did that case come in? November?
I don't have the thing here with me.
Well, I can look it up real quick, too.
I think that week is...
You are the only participant in this conference. Press any key to continue this conference. The conference will now continue.
Your question is, when did it come in, right?
Well, I'm thinking we're
the deadline.
Pushing over the
seven-month
time frame, but if that's what the company is requesting, it would be implied that they're okay with pushing it back, but the interim rates are pretty aggressive at this point in time. So,
we had that week free.
Could we do the 20th? 21st, 22nd. Does anyone know when Nehruk is?
I just think it's the 19th.
I know.
Nehruk? You want
to? Maybe we should. Okay.
I think I'm okay for the week of the 20th. But the 19th.
July 18th.
The 20th. Yeah, July.
Okay. So what about if we started on... How many days do we need?
You know, I'm guessing 3, but it might go 4.
Or, oh, wow.
Or it might go 2. They might come in with a settlement.
Should we start on the 21st or the afternoon of the 21st, 22nd, 23rd?
21st, 22nd, 23rd. If it goes the full 3 days, that'll be a little tough for you. Your 21st is this agenda day. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. The 23rd is the agenda day.
I think that's the reason we'll start on the 21st.
You do realize that overlaps Nehruk, right?
Well,
last day of Nehruk.
Typically, I mean, that's just a few morning sessions. I don't mind leaving wherever the conference is on a Tuesday afternoon.
A future president may have more responsibilities. We got to start getting used to that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. So it's okay with
me. Do we want to do it the same way that we did? We're doing the MDU starting at 1 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon and doing the Thursday, Friday, or just going 2 long days on Thursday and Friday, starting it early? And
I'm good with either of those options. Probably... I'm kind of assuming that this meeting will be virtual, but maybe not. Maybe this one
the
will not.
The hearing or the...
The Nehruk.
Do you want to check with them? And I mean, we can schedule the days and let you set the starting time on Wednesday.
Sure, I'll do that. I
mean, just the coming days here.
So we'll put a hold on it and then
make
sure it works for you.
Right.
Okay.
Do you get crowned?
I don't get crowned until
that's
November.
That's not your fall, right?
Right.
Okay.
Crowned.
Wednesday that week is the agenda day.
It isn't. The 21st is not. So let's set it for the 21st, 22nd, 23rd. Block those days off and we'll all get back to you on a start date. Okay.
Okay, so we said 21, starting at 1 o'clock.
Or I'll confirm that with you.
Noon.
I'll confirm the start time, Jerry.
Okay.
Just block the 3 days out, 21, 22, 23.
Okay.
And Julia will figure out
our
specifics.
After all of us, whatever time she chooses, I think we've heard that Brian and I are agreeable to it.
All right. Thanks, Jerry.
Before we close out, I got a couple more, but these won't take long for scheduling.
Okay.
Are we ready?
I think we're ready.
And maybe these are done in that, we just did the siting thing on Basin Electric and did that notice for May 6th at 9:30 in Stanley. So is that, do we need to have that discussed on scheduling and approved?
I assumed you guys had talked about it and knew that date worked. But if so, not, we should set that.
So to make sure that we got the rates, the dates right then, on the wind case, the 433 case, we're looking at June 10th and holding the 11th.
Yep.
And on the 10th, you want to start at noon?
8:15.
8:15, yes, you're right, okay. And then the rate case, we start at 8:15.
No, I'm going to get you a start time on that.
Okay, a break at 1.
Nope, that's a different one.
Never mind.
Just for the rate case, it's July 21st, 22nd, 23rd.
Got it. Okay, I was just writing in the wrong place.
And I think Pamela has these down, too, so she can be your checkpoint.
Okay.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, Jerry.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So May 6th works for both of you for that hearing?
Yep.
Ryan?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
That's done.
And then do we have April 16th scheduled for that NODAC that we...
I think so, but...
Mm-hmm. It is. We have a hold on it now, but
okay.
It's official now, so it moves from hold to...
Do you need me to check the 16th?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. I think we're just all right. Clarified now on this record.
All right. Are we good then? No more scheduling? You guys want to schedule something fun?
Maybe we'll just
nothing on the list here looks like fun. Oh.
Unless well, we wanted to choose some potential dates for a technical conference just in case they work, if we could kind of hold.
We should probably start putting a hold on those. Since we've already got something in May.
Since we're here.
Yeah. And scheduling is so fun. Who doesn't want to do more of it?
I really don't.
How about Tuesday the 4th?
Tuesday the 4th of?
May.
May?
Although there's a commission meeting. That might be tough.
On the 5th is the commission meeting.
Yeah. So there's that downside. The 6th is taken. There's Tuesday the 11th and Wednesday the 12th that look open.
That's that petroleum council. But the...
Dang.
How about the 20th? It's later than we had all hoped, I think, but...
I'm open.
I'm open.
And I'm open on the 18th.
I am too.
Should we? That's again the day before,
a meeting, and
sometimes it does.
The day after, I have two SPP meetings on the 17th.
The day before that. But the 20th, you're available.
20th, I would prefer.
Let's put a hold on the 20th for the technical conference. I feel so FERC-like talking about technical conferences. Okay.
And we should also be thinking about, so if we got these people to come and potentially, you know, how they do when they do travel, oftentimes they come up here with more than one person. So you got the RTOs, if our various utility companies come, maybe some legislators want to come, potentially NERC and FERC and WAPA. At what point, some press probably, at what point do we even fill a room like the Brynhild Haugland room if we're trying to still do at least some level of social distancing? Do we potentially at some point want to choose a site off site with just a much larger facility.
Brynhild holds like what, a couple hundred?
It's a big room.
It's pretty big, but I think.
I mean, I don't love that room. I think it's super awkward and goofy. So, yeah. Like, it has some good tech stuff, but even like that galley up on top, it's awkward for stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Are you thinking about for people who would want to watch?
Yeah. Well, is this something that's going to attract the public? Because we have public meetings, and I don't know that very many people will want to come to this.
Well, if we don't have it at Brynhild, then we could look in April. Because that was the whole reason. Well, except for, I guess, the travel.
And legislative work. And I know for SPP, it gets us through a quarterly meeting that is the last week of April. And
sure. Yeah.
I think we count on the Brynhild album for now, but as we contemplate it, if we think that this is going to draw crowds,
we
end up having to do something else.
We should probably start having Stacy to help with the coordination and, you know, just like some of that stuff is she's got the skills for. Like thinking about the room, even looking at the room and thinking about it in terms of setup and presentations of where we would go, what would we do off-site, where would we go off-site, just like Ramcota or the Dovewood or whatever it's called now, a hotel like that. The Holiday Inn up north has really nice facilities.
BSC
is energy. BSC. Really nice. Ooh, yeah. See, Stacy. That would be the best. We should look. You should see what's. Would you mind checking into that? Because that facility is the best.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
Parking. Maybe spend the
Maybe. But yeah, see if that date is available and how much it costs.
Maybe in the meantime, maybe we should just contact Legislative Council and ask if they'll hold the Brynhild album for us.
Maybe Stacy could do that too.
I can do that too and have them in contact with them.
Oh, cool. Awesome. All right.
Madam Chair, I have one other item.
Hold on. Are we done with that?
I am.
Not to cause.
Thanks, Jerry.
Sound the alarm, but I need to leave at 12:15. So.
Okay.
SIGs or whatever.
For such a short agenda, we sure have babbled.
I didn't think 12:30 would be a problem. I said, oh, piece of cake.
Three regular agenda.
I'm lucky. It's like, okay. So, what do you have?
On May the 19th, right?
The afternoon.
Mark that on your calendars for an employee going away party.
Can you guys do that? Can you hold it?
We have an informal that day.
Yeah, but it'd be later.
Yeah.
Okay. You'll put a hold? Okay.
No, I think it, yeah.
I think if we're going to have that, and at least as long as we have the 20th out for the technical conference, I think we just plan on not having any informal that day. I think we're going to have our hands full.
Probably, yeah.
So remove the informal?
Yeah, I would say that's a good idea.
I don't think there's anything in there right now anyway, so.
Okay.
Perfect.
Anything else? All right. Thank you.